Welcome to Locked On Warriors, your daily podcast on all things Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Wes Goldberg, Warriors writer for the Mercury News, and it is La Tuesday, which means I'm here with Connor Letourneau of the San Francisco Chronicle. He wanted to talk about the NBA draft and some of the sleepers of the draft, but I'm not ready to have that conversation. I haven't done as much work on that as you have, Connor, so I'm going to spend some of this week researching that, and we can talk about that next week. But instead, we're going to talk about friendships in the NBA and get to our quarantine updates. But we're going to start by talking about Sports Illustrated, which on Monday laid off several of its employees, including renowned writer Chris Ballard. Connor, I know that you know Chris well, and to me, this is really sort of the final nail in the Sports Illustrated coffin. Clearly, it is no longer what it once was.
Yeah, that really bummed me out on several levels. Chris is someone who I've looked up to for years. I think he's one of the best sports writers in the country. He's kind of on that holy grail of sports writers for me, guys I've really emulated a lot in my career. He's written some of my favorite stories of all time. And the cool thing about this job, covering this team, is you end up getting to know a lot of your idols. And so he's been one of those people for me the last few years who have gotten to know on a personal level and has been somewhat of a mentor to me. And to see him get laid off, it just reminds you that no one is safe. You know, anyone can get laid off, and not just in this industry, but in the world we live in. I'm sure we have people listening who are in different fields who are worried about maybe getting laid off or getting furloughed or what have you. It's just the state of affairs right now.
It's really sad. I mean, we've seen this with Sports Illustrated happening for a really long time. And I know that this pandemic that we're dealing with right now isn't helping matters as far as employers trying to retain their employees. But I don't think that would have mattered in the case of SI. I felt like we were kind of getting to this point anyway. I mean, a guy like Chris Ballard had a lot of value to what Sports Illustrated used to be. But for what Sports Illustrated now is, which is now the Maven, let's be honest with what they really are. I mean, they bought the name Sports Illustrated, and that's basically all they kept, right? Was the name. And
yeah.
And now they're taking all their resources and pooling it toward these aggregators, basically. And look, great if you're getting paid $30,000 a year and you're doing something with that and you're trying to break into the industry, but what they are doing as far as ruining this what was once such a prestigious and important thing in sports writing, they've completely ruined it. They've completely killed it, and they're going to keep kind of trumping along with the Sports Illustrated name, but it's just not going to be Sports Illustrated anymore at all. And so, look, I think a guy like Chris Ballard is going to be fine. Like, he will have his choice of places to work, I would imagine. But for a lot of other people that have been laid off, it's going to be really tough.
Yeah, no, and it's, I mean, this the state of the industry right now. As phenomenal as Chris Ballard is, there's just not a lot of jobs out there. And I'm sure he's at a level where someone will create a job even in the current landscape. But for a lot of us, I mean, I just think about myself. If I was laid off tomorrow, I might have a tough time getting another job. And that's why I'm really thankful for the jobs we do have now. And I do feel like things are relatively stable at the Chronicle. And so I'm thankful for that. But, you know, count your blessings. This is a time in our lives when I think everyone should really count their blessings and be thankful for what they have.
Absolutely. And you mentioned there, like, you know, Chris Ballard, guys like him, even in the state of, you know, the economy of what it is now, during this coronavirus thing, I do wonder how long it'll be before he's picked up, or if it'll be a situation like when ESPN laid off all those folks before and they ended up getting paid out throughout their contract or throughout the year, and then they had a non-compete. I don't know if that's going to be the situation with Ballard, but I can't imagine that he would be facing any of that sort of thing right now with the way that SI was operating. Where does a guy like him go? I mean, is it kind of just down to ESPN or The Athletic?
I could see him writing books. I could see him, you know, he's also a professor at Cal Berkeley in their grad program. So doing that and writing books, I mean, that sounds like a pretty good life to me. You know, maybe The Athletic makes a run at him. There's just not a lot of other places I could see willing to spend that kind of money. But, you know, Chris Ballard has written about all types of sports, but I think at his core, he's really a basketball guy. And he's written some phenomenal stories about basketball players and coaches. What are some of your favorite stories that Chris Ballard's written?
Well, I wanted to ask you that. You go first.
My favorite story, there's several. My favorite story by him is probably about on Bison Dele, who was a guy who played at Arizona and Maryland, played on several teams in the NBA, was actually a really good player for the Clippers and for the Pistons, won a title for the, with the 97 Bulls, was on the bench for them, and then ended up quitting the NBA far before he needed to, just to kind of travel the world. He was kind of a, he had a lot of wanderlust. He was a very, he had a lot of interests. And so he traveled the world, lived a very eclectic lifestyle, and then just kind of disappeared under mysterious circumstances off the coast of Tahiti. And Chris Ballard went to Tahiti and investigated his disappearance and wrote a beautiful story about his final days. And so I tweeted that out tonight. I highly recommend anyone who hasn't read that to go back and read it. It's one of my favorite pieces of sports writing ever.
I mean, there's just so many that he's written. Well, what I specifically love about Chris Ballard was his ability to tell a good story, obviously, but he did it in a, like, he had a voice that I thought was really specific, and you could read a story and just know immediately that it was Chris Ballard. And that is so hard to do these days, where I feel like a lot of people who are coming up in this industry are, and this has always been the case, I believe, but like so many people are trying to emulate somebody else, and so they just end up sounding like somebody else. But Chris, to me, always had a very specific voice in his writing, and it was never over the top. It was never about him, right? He was never about, you know, me. It was never, I talked to this person and so the sources told me this. Like, the stories were never about him, but his voice still came through and he told it in a way that I thought was specific and unique to him. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. I learned a lot from him about story structure, just how to approach stories. Another great story is the Robert Swift story. I know you like that one, right?
Yeah,
I think we've talked about that one.
The Brian, as a Heat fan, the Brian Grant one
Read that one.
Oh, I mean, that was to me just a really important one. Brian Grant was one of my dudes when I was.
He was actually one of my dudes too, because he was on the Jail Portland. Blazers.
Yeah. That's a tremendous one. I mean, we could sit here all day and talk. I mean, he wrote a bunch of stuff on the Warriors that was just phenomenal. During that dynastic run, and for the case of this audience right now, I mean, if you haven't gone back and read some of Chris Ballard's stuff on just those dynasty Warriors over the last 5 years, go and read that stuff. Or even if you maybe read one or two of them, he's written I don't know, a dozen at least articles on those Warriors, and they're all, you know, worth your time. And I think you could still learn a lot about a lot of the stuff that was going on back then, and just sort of the personality of the team and things like that. But look, as far as Sports Illustrated goes, I think that there's still a void to be filled there. I don't think that people like Chris Ballard should be out of work for very long. And I think that there's still a need for feature writing, even if we don't think about it that way anymore. Right. I do think that there are, like, what we're seeing right now happen is the value that newspapers have and traditional publications, institutional publications have. How many people are going now to the Washington Post and the New York Times and just these institutional publications that are able to just inform the country and inform the audience and stuff like that? And what Chris Ballard did was tremendous feature writing, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't to the point of the coronavirus pandemic coverage, right? It wasn't like Be Still Places that provide that sort of thing in the sports landscape.
Definitely. I mean, I find myself going to Washington Post. A personal shout out, SF Chronicle. I think we've done a phenomenal job covering this pandemic every single day. Just stuff that I think every person needs to know, and no one can do it better than your local paper, because they're the ones that have the insight, who have the people who've been on the beats for years, who have that institutional knowledge, who have the sourcing in City Hall and all those things. Those things really matter at all times, but they matter even more during a national or international crisis like this, you know. And I'm really worried genuinely about the state of the industry, because if this continues to go the direction it's going in, we're going to lose all those people. We're already losing a lot of city hall reporters and those people on the front lines. And you might not feel it on a day-to-day basis, but when you look at times like this, you can kind of see where the gaps are. And
I think there's a younger generation that doesn't really understand why newspapers exist, or why that they're important, or why people like you and I are worried about the state of the industry, because they get their information from so many other things, right? They get their information from blogs and aggregation and just Twitter alerts and Facebook alerts and whatever it might be. But all that information comes from sourcing that your local newspapers are doing. I mean, if you trace back your favorite blog to whatever aggregation site you use, and you just trace back that information, it will inevitably end up at a newspaper that you may have never clicked on an article for or read in your life, but you have somehow consumed the information that that reporter or that newspaper worked to gather and report. And so I do think that maybe if newspapers were to die tomorrow, right? And what we could talk about, you know, the White House and your local governments and all that stuff, but it still applies to sports writing too, where if all of a sudden newspapers go away and the people that they employ and the institutions that these organizations and these leagues cater to, if you get rid of those institutions and you get rid of those reporting positions, you're going to see a huge lag in information for fans of their teams. And it might not be overnight, but it will be over time, certainly. And you'll keep going into your blog that you always go to, that you don't have a paywall for, and all these things. And eventually, the information will slowly dry up, and it will just come to a point where there is no more information. And I know that's like the doomsday version of this, but on some end of the spectrum, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And I know you have a background in news reporting, right? You probably understand all the dynamics of this even better than I do.
All right, let's take a break here, because we've got a thrilling conversation about friendships in the NBA that we gathered, right, with our firsthand reporting. This is Locked On Warriors. Sports have come to a screeching halt with basketball benched and pitchers off the mound, but our friends at MyBookie aren't going to let it get you down. Stay sane and stay entertained with the access to your favorite games like blackjack, roulette, slots, and war and more. It doesn't matter whether you're out on the front lines or quarantined at home, the fun doesn't have to come to an end with MyBookie. Video poker, not your thing, but still need a fix? They've got you covered with a host of live casino dealers online. That's right. They have professional dealers at their tables live on site 24/7. Your favorite squad sidelined because of the pandemic? Don't even sweat it. MyBookie has partnered with some of the leading esports brands to bring you wagers on virtual action straight from the court in NBA 2K20. Plus, you can always do your part to make your bankroll great again by taking advantage of shifting odds on political bets. You can trust the industry leaders in times like these. They're reliable, upright, and best of all, they pay fast when you win. Visit mybookie.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 150% bonus on your first casino deposit. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to receive a 150% cash bonus on your first deposit, and you can claim those extra funds all the way up to $750. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You spin, you win, you get paid. All right, Connor, so one of the rules of La Tuesday is I text you in the afternoon and I ask you what you want to talk about. And so, like I said at the top of the show, you wanted to talk about the NBA draft, which I'm sure is what our listeners wanted to talk about, but I was not prepared enough to talk about draft sleepers, so we're going to hold that for next week.
Yeah, it wasn't just like top five picks. It was, I wanted to talk about like international prospects that they could get in the second round, go real deep. Right. So I don't blame you for not being ready.
Yeah, you kind of sprang it on me, but I should have been doing more of my research. I should have been like Steve Kerr and just like grinding film in San Diego, but I'm not that cool. So instead, we're going to talk. I asked you for your second choice, and you came up with the idea of friendships in the NBA, real friendships versus, I don't know, fake friendships, or is there a better way that you want to put this? Work friendships. Okay, so explain your idea then.
Yeah, so one thing I try to tell people a lot is I think a lot of people think about – most people who are fans of sports – probably topped out athletically in high school, maybe low-level college, right? So they look back on their athletic experience and judge professional athletes based off of what they experienced. So I'm guessing a lot of people who played in high school and college, you know, some of their best friends in life probably played those sports with them, and they maybe still keep in touch with them, and they're some of their fondest relationships and friendships that they still have. And so they think that it's like that in the NBA, that these guys are all friends and they all hang out and they're all buddies. And look, don't get me wrong. I don't think that there's that many times in the NBA where I've seen just an absolute hatred between two players. I think that does exist at times. There have been feuds. There has been roster turmoil. But generally speaking, most guys in the NBA have a working relationship with the guys they play with. It's like any work dynamic. You know, I'm sure you've worked in a lot of different offices, a lot of different places in your career. I'm sure there's certain people from each of those stops that you might keep in touch with and have a true friendship with. But the vast majority of the people, you just have like a solid mutual respect. You go into work, you know, you're friendly. You maybe get to know them a little bit on a personal level, but it doesn't really extend past the surface level. And so I think it's important to understand that the NBA is the exact same way. And especially nowadays where the NBA, there's so much turnover where a lot of times these rosters are so different 1 year to the next. But I do think it's a timely conversation because friendship in the NBA has come to matter in that guys are making some of their major free agency decisions based off who they want to play with. Just like you might make a decision in your life because there's a friend of yours who lives in a certain city who you want to reconnect with, or you know, you want to, you know, move to a different city because your girlfriend moved there or whatever. Everyone has those different dynamics.
Yeah. And I think part of this too, and you mentioned what the difference between like high school and college and the NBA is a lot of the guys in the NBA are very different ages. I mean, there are points where there are regularly guys a decade plus older than the newest player on the team, right? Like a rookie might get drafted to a team who might be, you know, 19, 20 years old playing with somebody who's 36 years old. That happens all the time. And so I think you end up having like factions in locker rooms of young guys, middle-aged, you know, comparatively to NBA ages, and then, you know, vets and stuff like that. I think you have a lot of that sort of dynamic that doesn't exist when everybody, you know, on your junior varsity team is a freshman, right? So right. I think that's part of it. And that kind of relates to what you were talking about in a workplace. Like you kind of gravitate to people who are your age. And so when you do form a relationship, I think this is also poignant now because you have a lot of guys who might be, you know, 22 or 23 years old. Like in the case of the Warriors, they've got several players who are, you know, 25 years old or younger. And they're sort of the people who are gravitating to each other during this quarantine, basically, this shelter in place situation that we're dealing with. Whether it's on Skype or FaceTime or whatever they're doing, like they're playing 2K with each other, they're playing Call of Duty with each other. Like all the young guys on the Warriors are doing that, and you can kind of see those real relationships come to the forefront. While you have other people like Steph Curry, who may not have, I don't think anybody would say Steph Curry and Marquese Chris are best friends, right? Like they have a work relationship, like I think you would say, but for the most part, Steph's hanging out with his family and his wife.
Yeah, and you know, during the course of the season, when you're on the road together, you'll go get dinner together, you'll have team meals. That's really when the bonding happens. But when you're at home, someone like Steph, you know, he's got three kids. You know, he has a wife. He has a lot of business obligations that he has to attend to. So he doesn't really have a lot of time or energy to go get a beer with, you know, Michael Mulder or something like that. But I remember one thing that Steph told me during the preseason this year that I thought just kind of illustrated the dynamic was toward the beginning of training camp, after a practice one day, everyone's kind of getting ready to go home. Everyone's done for the day. Jordan Poole goes up to Steph. Jordan Poole, 20 years old, rookie, has just moved into San Francisco, kind of probably doesn't know a lot of people, doesn't have a lot of people to hang out with yet, goes up to Steph and he says, "Hey, what are you getting into? You want to hang out?" And Steph just kind of looked at him like, "I appreciate the invite, but you obviously, you know, you don't understand the dynamic yet. Like that isn't something that you necessarily should be asking Steph, because people who've been around the team know what Steph's routine is, right? So he was like, "Sorry, man, I need to go home and like take care of my kids, you know."
I'm asking you, I'm not clarifying for you, but do you feel like Steph was being rude in that situation, or do you feel like it was just like, "Hey, like I have like these other responsibilities that I have to get to as much as I might like to hang out.
No, I don't. I think he found it endearing on Jordan's part. I think he appreciated the earnestness and how it was asked. And I mean,
the Jordan Poole, the word with Jordan Poole that's been thrown around has been confidence. And that was definitely a confident moment by Jordan Poole.
Oh yeah. And look, I'm sure Jordan, just like we would go talk to like a Chris Ballard or something, try to pick his brain and want to hang out with him just to learn and talk about the craft. I'm sure he probably was the same way with Steph, and I'm sure they got those opportunities over the course of the season. Maybe not as much as Jordan wanted just because Steph was injured, but but no one on the team is going to tell you that Steph's a rude guy or off-putting. But the truth is, not a lot of them hang out with Steph away from the court, at least at home or in the off season. Damian Lee obviously does, cause he's married to Steph's sister and they go to family functions together and things like that. They work out together. But Klay Thompson, who is obviously the fellow Splash brother, people assume that they're best friends. I think there's a ton of mutual respect there. I think they love each other in a genuine way. I think they will be, you know, in each other's lives forever in a lot of ways, but they don't actually hang out ever, you know. But that doesn't mean they're not friends.
Right. And I mean, if you look at a guy like with Draymond too, I mean, he's got his own family and things like that. And so like all these guys that get to that certain age have families. And that's what kind of makes some of these things like non-Warriors related. But you look at, I'm always going to bring it back to the Miami Heat, but like you look at those big three Miami Heat teams, and what was cool about that group is that they did hang out with each other. Like LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh like legitimately hung out like all the time. And right. So when you end up having teams like that, you can tell. I'm not saying it's better or worse. I'm just saying you could tell because we all knew that. I didn't have any reporting on those Heat teams. I was just a fan of those Heat teams. But you could see on social media, on TV, and everything like that, like there is a different dynamic there where it feels like the Warriors are very – and this is part of what has made the Warriors so successful. They're very about the work, and I think there is a professionalism with that team that is so overwhelming that guys who are new to the Warriors talk about notice immediately, right? I think that to them is their greatest strength is that, hey, this is your workplace. We all take it seriously, and yet it is very like Silicon Valley in the way that like this is a workplace – but it's like an open floor plan. Like there's a keg of beer type of like chill vibe to it.
Yeah.
But it is still work.
And that's because Joe Lacob and the higher ups, the guys who really help set the tone for the culture, come from that background. You know, they were VCs. They were in that Silicon Valley culture, and they've kind of brought that vibe to the Warriors at all levels. So I think that's a good point that you make there. And I think one thing you notice is when I really realized the difference between real friendship and work friendship in the context of the NBA is when you see people who are actually truly close friends, you know, people who actually happen to be in the same locker room and on the same team and actually have a friendship that probably precedes their time together on that team. One that stood out to me was Kevin Durant's friendship with Quinn Cook. Mm-hmm. They'd known each other since their high school days in Maryland, and they had remained in touch throughout the years. When Quinn Cook was at Duke, he would come spend parts of the off season, part of the summer with Kevin in Oklahoma City, and they had that level of friendship so that when they were on the same team, they were hanging out after every practice and Quinn was going to Kevin's house and they were hanging out like any pair of close friends would, and seeing that just juxtaposed against the rest of the team, it's like, oh, okay, that's different, you know, that's unique.
Yeah, and going out and hanging out with other people's houses is not a thing that we can do anymore, and I think that's a good place to end this segment and get into our next segment. We're gonna do a quarantine and a is what we're calling it. It's a Q&A about the quarantine. This is Locked On Warriors. All right, we're going to wrap up today's show with a quarantine and A. It's what we are calling this segment, which is a Q&A segment, but it's all about the quarantine. Connor, it's the Tuesday, so I will start with you and your question. What did you want to get into?
Yeah, so I have a few, but the first one I wanted to ask is what, and I want the reader or listener who's listening along to answer this question to themselves, what is the one thing what is the one little thing that you rediscovered that you like during the quarantine? We've all had so much free time that I think we've kind of had the ability to go back and read a book that maybe we forgot we loved, or watch a movie, or eat something that we didn't get the chance to eat recently. What is that for you?
So you're looking for a pretty specific thing.
Yeah, like it can be like a pastime, a hobby.
Okay, I mean that, like, as well. I mean, two things come to mind to me immediately. The first one is just cooking. I forgot how much I love cooking. I mean, you know this as well as I do. When you are a sports writer, you rarely have a chance to cook for yourself, because either you're on the road so you don't have a kitchen, or you're at home, and if you're at home, you've got home games and other things to worry about. And by the time you're done with stuff, like, you're grabbing whatever fast food, or what you're eating at arenas and things like that. So I haven't even had like food in my refrigerator. I actually enjoy shopping for food and reading labels and things like that. So I have just enjoyed the entire process of buying food, bringing it home, and then cooking it, and then consuming it. Like, I have enjoyed that entire process, which is so much more work than just going and grabbing some Thai food down the street. But it is, to me, way more enjoyable. I don't know. I'm talking about cooking like nobody's ever done it before, but I feel like I haven't done it in a long time.
I'm embarrassed to say this, but at the start of the quarantine, I went grocery shopping for the first time in 2 years. I literally had not gone grocery shopping in 2 years because I'm at my apartment so little that every time I went grocery shopping, the food would go bad. The milk would go bad. Whatever I got would go bad. And so it just didn't make sense. And so I just completely gave up on ever grocery shopping ever again. And so I've rediscovered what it is like grocery shopping and to just live in an apartment. Like, yeah, you've been over recently, and I'm like, I don't know where utensils are. I don't know where basic things in my apartment are because I literally spend no time here.
You feel like a stranger in your own home.
And I've lived in my apartment for almost 3 years. So it's – but sorry, you were saying –
No, I want a quick side note on milk. Milk seems like a thing that you buy when you first start, like, living on your own, right? Because your parents always bought milk and stuff. Like, so you just, like, you know that milk is supposed to go in the refrigerator. I used to buy milk and then not drink it, and then it would go bad. And I always felt like, all right, well, then I got to buy a new thing of milk. I realized I don't drink milk. And then just stop buying milk. Does that make any sense? Like, I always feel like you're supposed to buy milk
when I have cereal. That's the only time I have milk.
Right.
And I don't eat enough cereal to warrant.
Right.
But milk goes bad pretty fast. For me, a specific thing would be PB&J sandwiches. I had them with lunch every day in high school, would have them periodically in college. And then I literally don't think I had a PB&J sandwich in several years until this week. And I went out, I was at the grocery store, I got some bread, some raspberry jam.
What's your ratio from peanut butter to jam? Is it a 50-50 ratio, or do you go more one or the other?
50-50.
It is 50-50.
Yeah.
I disagree with you on that.
Yeah, no, that's how I roll. and it's just so good. And I almost look at it more as a snack because I get, like, the small bread, and so it's not that filling. But it's absolutely delicious, and nothing beats it.
Any other questions?
Another question would be, what kind of the opposite of that is, what is something that you've discovered that you like during this downtime? You know, it could be a TV show. It could be anything.
I haven't really discovered anything that I like. Is that bad on me? I mean, I'm like binging Better Call Saul, but I knew I liked Better Call Saul.
I know one thing that you've discovered that you like.
What?
You're enjoying your Nintendo, or so you're enjoying your Nintendo Switch, aren't you?
I mean, I bought a Nintendo Switch and I bought Pokemon for it, and I just like, but I knew I liked Pokemon, and so right. I actually just beat it this last weekend.
Oh wow!
And I don't know. Yeah, thank you. But I don't know that there's another game on the Nintendo Switch. So basically the jury is out on the Nintendo Switch.
I was going to say the Nintendo Switch. I got 2K and Mario Kart. And honestly, 2K on that is not awesome, but Mario Kart is really fun. So I've been really enjoying Mario Kart. And I already knew I liked Mario Kart, but I'd never had a Nintendo Switch before. I'd never even played a Nintendo Switch before. So I would say that's my new thing.
I might have to get in Mario Kart next.
That
might
also, be honestly, like, I want to walk, you know, just around the neighborhood. Super fun.
All right. Well, oh, the other thing I discovered I like, drinking with my friends via Skype or Zoom or whatever it is. Like, same. Never thought I'd like that.
I also have realized, like, why do we travel to people's houses to hang out with them, especially if they live far away? Like, you live, like, 40 minutes away from me, and last night me and my roommate played Scattergories via FaceTime.
Yeah, could have just done that.
It felt like you were right there. It was great.
Yeah, I don't have to deal with Bart. It's great. Like, it's
we need to utilize that shit more.
That wraps up this edition of Locked On Warriors. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Rejecting the Screen. Thanks for listening.